the first presentation on will we be able to answer the question of that HDF. Mm-hmm.
Eric. Thank you very much. So if we discuss CETP inhibition and whether it works, I think first of all we should spend 1 minute to see what the whole HDL increasing field is actually doing. Now, if we look at the recent developments over the last couple of years, we can actually say that our traditional view on HDL as the second in line target to prevent cardiovascular disease, which was fed by epidemiology, has encountered some hurdles, to put it mildly. First of all, if you look at the HDL and the confounding, we have known for many years that HDL may in fact be a perfect thermometer for proatherogenic risk factors, because it's influenced by a lot of traditional cardiovascular risk factors. Now, if we look at all the great trials, for instance, if we look at the meta-analyses by Breel, though, we can see that whereas if you look at all trials combined, LDL lowering is invariably associated with risk reduction. But if you look at the HDL value, actually the HDL increase is in intervention trials not really associated with benefit. And the third recent paper by Feucht et al., they demonstrated that if you look at the HDL data, that in fact the HDL plasma levels are very nicely correlated with disease, but genetically increased HDL, thereby in an effort to correct for the other risk factors affecting HDL. So genetic HDL increase is not associated with cardiovascular disease risk. So these novel insights have more or less increased the hurdle for HDL increasing strategies. So as we heard yesterday that it's very difficult to find other surrogates than true cardiovascular endpoints, I think for now we should conclude that at least for all agents, each and every individual agent increasing HDL, we are unfortunately forced to wait for cardiovascular endpoint trials, because HDL as in such has lost its value as a perfect biomarker for cardiovascular risk. So that actually makes the whole story for CETP a little bit complicated. Now, what does CETP do? Well, if you look at CETP, it begins with the triglyceride-rich particles. So then VLDL is the major target binding to CETP. As soon as CETP binds to the VLDL particles, there is the onset of an exchange reaction. So in fact, the major exchangers for this VLDL particle are the LDL and the HDL particle. So what happens is that the triglycerides in VLDL get exchanged with LDL, making triglyceride-rich LDL particles and cholesterol-enriched VLDL particles. So the first step is that CETP will increase cholesterol content in the VLDL, making this more proatherogenic. Then the triglyceride-rich LDL is degraded via hepatic lipase and others, resulting in the formation of small, dense LDL. And we've known for the last 2 to 3 decades that small, dense LDL is an extremely atherogenic particle. And at the same time, this happens with the HDL. Again, triglyceride-enriched HDL gets degraded to small, dense HDL, and small, dense HDL can be rapidly cleared, resulting in the lowering of the HDL concentration, which is considered from an epidemiological point of view to be protective. So the end result of CETP is more atherogenic VLDL, small dense LDL, and lower levels of HDL. So this is the rationale why it makes sense to look at CETP inhibition as a future target. So what did we learn from genetics? And we will hear a lot more about genetics final on, so I'll just skip to the findings on CETP decrease by genetic causes and cardiovascular risk. Now, if we look at the meta-analyses by Thompson et al. Several years ago, it was observed that for every 5% increase in HDL due to a CETP SNP, it was associated with an approximately 5% cardiovascular risk decrease. So this actually supports the fact that inhibiting CETP would be beneficial. And more recently, the beautiful rich database of the Copenhagen Heart Study by Anne Tyberg, published in the JACC, she showed that if in a 34-year follow-up study, so which is actually quite long, there was a risk reduction of approximately 24%. So again, here, a 14% HDL increase by the CETP SNP activity was associated with a 25% cardiovascular risk reduction, lending firm support to the beneficial effects, at least on long-term follow-up data. But there was one interesting finding which Voigt reported in his Lancet paper, that actually the CETP variant is also associated with lowering of LDL. So in fact, we can't say that the CETP SNP is solely reflecting what happens on HDL, because as I demonstrated to you, it's an efflux of neutral lipids between the VLDL and the HDL-LDL fractions. So the changes in the fractions is not restricted to the HDL fraction. So what did CETP inhibition in cardiovascular prevention do to date? Well, we learned very early on that CETP gene transfer into rodents is a potent stimulator of atherogenesis. We learned that CETP inhibition studies, for instance, in rabbits, potently inhibited atherogenesis. And we learned that the CETP inhibition in humans was associated with a beneficial change in the lipid profile. So there was a very good basis to study CETP inhibition in humans. Then if we take a brief look in history, we all know very, very good what happened to the first CETP inhibitor entering the phase 3, which was torcetrapib. There was an increased mortality in patients being treated with torcetrapib on top of atorvastatin. So there's been now 5 years of debate, what is the cause of this failure? And basically there are four scenarios. The first one is that inhibiting CETP generates dysfunctional HDL. I'll come back to that. That torcetrapib has off-target toxicity, which is actually responsible for the majority of the adverse effect. It could be that HDL increase is an epiphenomenon altogether, so that's the reason why CETP increased HDL doesn't work. Or, in fact, CETP itself may be pro-atherogenic. Well, if we look at the post-hoc analyses in the Illuminate and the Illustrate trials, actually, there's not a whole lot of support that CETP inhibition generates dysfunctional HDL. If you look at the upper quintiles, so the highest responders with the largest HDL increase, for instance, in the Illuminate, these are actually the subjects who, if anything, show more benefit. And the same was observed in the Illustrate study. So if you would create dysfunctional HDL, it's not very likely that the highest HDLs will actually have the best benefit. So for now, there's not really a lot of support for dysfunctional HDL creation, including all of the functional studies by Ellenthal and others. So if you look at the off-target toxicity, there the story has really evolved. We have learned that if you, for instance, look in rats, which you see on the left panel, and I can't point, I guess, yes, I can, the left panel, you can see that in rats who don't have endogenous CETP, infusing torcetrapib has a clear increase in blood pressure, which doesn't occur if you give it to you give other CETP inhibitors. So this off-target toxicity is not dependent on CETP activity; it's only related to the compound itself. And we've learned that whereas other CETP inhibitors don't have these off-target toxicities, they don't increase aldosterone, they don't increase corticosterone, they don't have a blood pressure effect, we learned that this translates also into the human setting. For instance, the dalcetrapib, but also the anacetrapib data show absolutely no blood pressure increase in humans. So that led to continuation of the DAL outcome study in spite of the fact that torcetrapib had increased mortality. Well, it was a very large program, 15,600 patients, and as we recently learned, there was the recent publication of the DAL outcomes showing, in spite of a 31 to 40% increase in HDL, there was no cardiovascular benefit. So what do we learn? Well, I think if we're quite honest, we have to conclude the following, that the 31 to 40% HDL-C increase by dalcetrapib does not offer the expected cardiovascular risk reduction, which we predicted based on epidemiological evidence. So this would imply that at least if we look at these data, we have to say that the isolated CETP-induced HDL increase is not effective. So the epidemiological data, which we extrapolated from large surveys, show that we can't use that knowledge for CETP-induced HDL increase. But luckily, there are differentiating factors for the other CETP inhibitors. If you look at this, unfortunately, somewhat small overview, you can see here that the LDL reduction by dalcetrapib is actually zero, whereas for anacetrapib and evacetrapib, you find LDL reductions of between 35 to 40%. The same holds true if you look at triglyceride reduction, and the same holds true if you look at Lp(a) reduction. So the two ongoing CETP inhibitors don't only have an HDL effect, they have a potent LDL lowering effect and a potent Lp(a) lowering effect. And in fact, that is to be expected, because we know that it's the neutral lipid transfer of triglycerides and cholesterol. And if you look at the data and the graph depicting the magnitude of the HDL change as compared to the magnitude of the LDL change, you can see here that whenever you have a more potent CETP inhibitor, you will not only increase HDL, you will invariably also decrease the LDL concentration. So what will this mean for DEFINE? Well, in DEFINE, I think we should conclude that it's very uncertain, and it became much more uncertain, whether the HDL increase by CETP per se will give us the so-called protection. But luckily, if we don't know what the HDL does, we are now faced with an additional LDL reduction, an additional non-HDL reduction, and an Lp(a) reduction, where obviously, these data differ profoundly for the ongoing CETP inhibitors as compared to the dalcetrapib. Now, in the Bayesian analyses which have been performed, in fact, these data may support this current concept, because if you look at the ILLUMINATE trial in 2007, you can see what happened to the primary endpoint in revascularization. And if you look at the New England Journal paper on the DEFINE study, the primary analyses at least point in the other direction. So this supports the concept that this may be different from the torcetrapib data. And actually, unfortunately, we will not know the true answer until 2017, when the data of the REVEAL study will show whether this concept actually holds true. For now, there has been no sign that the REVEAL study will be discontinued, so obviously there is still some progress there. So in summary, I would like to summarize as follows. The preclinical evidence and CETP genetics support CETP inhibition as a valid strategy for cardiovascular prevention. Off-target effects by torcetrapib are very likely to have contributed to an adverse outcome. And the futility of dalcetrapib shows the lack of a cardiovascular benefit by CETP inhibitor-induced isolated HDL increase. And finally, experimental data and human genetics provide a solid basis for further testing the concept that potent CETP inhibition might modify cardiovascular risk, although our primary concept is slowly being remodeled here. And these compounds will not answer the question whether CETP inhibition-induced HDL increase protects against cardiovascular disease. And I think for now, it's even less interesting to answer this question, because the trial should not be used to answer a mechanistical question, namely, will HDL increase protect? The trials actually support that HDL increase per se is a more dangerous concept to adhere to. And in the end, we will answer whether the complete anti-atherogenic profile change, including LDL, triglyceride, HDL, and Lp(a), will have a beneficial effect on cardiovascular outcome. Thank you.